And we're back. It is today's Monday edition, Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Did you have a nice weekend, Bonnie?
Yes, yes. And you?
Very good, very good.
Yeah, because the Cardinals won.
Well, we don't go into that. Well, today we visit with longtime activist and author Sam Daly Harris. In 1980, Harris founded Results, perhaps the best-kept secret in public policy discussion. He's a graduate of the University of Miami, a former music teacher and professional percussionist. He's also a leader in the microcredit movement, and he joins us from WWFM Radio in West Windsor, New Jersey. Welcome to you, Sam Daly Harris.
It's good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. So here we are in the midst of the government shutdown, Congress still haggling over raising the debt ceiling, and perhaps most of us are feeling more powerless and hopeless than ever. So are there any actions we could be taking to reclaim our democracy?
Well, always, actually. I really feel like I need to start with my own beginning, my own hopelessness. And I'm on a 21-city fall lecture tour and doing about the same number of radio interviews. And I always tell my story, but it so happens that it's placed in Miami in terms of my own start. And the question I always get is, how did you switch from music to a political will to end global poverty? What was that about? Mm-hmm. And when I look back in my life, there are a couple of events that really pushed me toward this change. In 1964, I graduated from high school at Southwest High School in Miami. And at the graduation ceremony, I learned that a high school fraternity brother a year younger had died the day before in a tractor-trailer accident in Georgia. And I was 17, and I thought I had forever. And really, with that mourning period and the funeral, I began to realize maybe I had 17 more minutes or months or years. And I began to ask the why questions. Why am I here? What am I here to do? 4 years later, college graduation day, University of Miami, Robert Kennedy is assassinated around that time. And it's more of those questions of purpose and what is this life? What is this death? And no answers, but I'm invited 9 years later to a presentation on the Hunger Project, also in Miami. Actually, it was in Miami Beach. And I went into this presentation thinking there are no solutions, because if there were solutions, somebody would have done something about world hunger by then. But I go in and I realize the obvious. There's no mystery to growing food or clean water or basic health. I'm not hopeless about my perceived lack of solutions. I'm hopeless about human nature, that people will just never get around to doing the things that could be done. And there's one human nature I have some control over, my own, and my questions. Why am I here? What am I here to do? So I start to get involved. And in 1978 and 79, I speak to 7,000 high school students in Miami, and then also when I moved in Los Angeles. And before I go into the first classroom, I read statements calling for the political will to end hunger. And I asked 7,000 high school students what the name of their member of Congress was. I don't want to know if they'd written them or met them, just the name. And out of 7,000, 200 no, fewer than 3%. 6,800 don't know the name of their member of Congress, more than 97%. And results started out of that gap between the calls for the political will to end hunger on the one hand and the lack of basic information on who represented us in Washington on the other. So that whole story starts in Miami and starts with my hopelessness. And then that's something that certainly changed with my involvement over time.
And you played percussion in the old Miami Philharmonic, right?
For 12 years, that's right.
Was that the Frederick Fennell days?
Well, he was at the University of Miami. That was the Alain Lombard days,
right?
With the symphony. Frederick Fennell was with the symphony and wind ensemble at the University of Miami. Jim Conlon conducted for a few years, Brian Priestman. But yes, that was back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm. So you said you felt absolutely hopeless about solving the big problems. So what inside you? You said you could control yourself, your own human nature. So yes. How did you found results? I mean, what were the steps you took?
Well, let's see. What's the short version? You know, so there's a quote by inventor and futurist Buckminster Fuller, who said, "The things to do are the things that need doing, that you see need to be done, and that no one else seems to see needs to be done." Well, I'd heard these calls for the political will to end hunger, and I'd asked thousands of high school students who their member of Congress was, and fewer than 3% knew. So I saw something that needed doing. And it was really out of that. I was in Los Angeles working on an ending hunger event, and I met a couple, and they said, "We're inspired by this event, but we're frustrated. We don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, when I was in Miami, I was with a group. Once a month, we used to write these letters to members of Congress using materials from Bread for the World at the time. And so we did it at their home, and a friend from the University of Miami, Gail Edwards, who was on the same TV show as the wife of this couple, couldn't make it and said, "Let's do it at my house," the following week. And before I knew it, I was driving around to 6 locations in Southern California leading these presentations. And it slowly, trial and error, evolved into results this organization.
Since we've brought up Miami in this discussion, could you tell us a little bit more about one Shirley Harris, your mother, who's probably listening now?
Well, actually, my mom moved to Key West in 1920 as a 2-year-old and up to Miami a few years later, and now lives in Broward County, and at the great age of a robust 95. And so I have deep roots in Miami.
And you have good genes then.
I hope so.
So how does results work exactly? What training and support's involved? How do you engage citizens in this legislative process?
Yeah, and I think the key is what I call a deep structure of support. So for example, one aspect of it is a monthly conference call with hundreds on the phone together. Guest speakers 2 months ago, the guest speaker was Jeffrey Sachs of the Earth Institute at Columbia. The following month, last month, the guest speaker was Paul Farmer, whose work was featured in Mountains Beyond Mountains by Tracy Kidder on his work in Haiti and elsewhere. So there's these guest speakers, not always of that level of notoriety, and there's Q&A, and there's a section to be more articulate, not just to understand the issues, but to maybe do a role play or in some other way become more articulate. So there's this, most organizations, they ask us for a click and a check and not much more. They kind of keep us in kindergarten and first grade as an advocate. And you really want to find an organization that takes you to 3rd and 5th and 9th and 12th grade and on to college as an advocate.
Something I read about that organization was that it's relentless yet polite. Could you explain that?
Well, you know, I think, yes, yeah, sure. And, you know, I might explain it using another organization who's also an offshoot of Results. The brief story is a friend from Results called me 6 years ago and said, "I saw an inconvenient truth on climate change 3 times in 10 days. And then I went to Nashville to learn to deliver the slideshow. And I went home to San Diego and I led it 43 times. And early on, my friend Marshall said, "I realized I was giving people 98% the problem and 2% what they could do about it, and that they couldn't buy enough Priuses or change enough light bulbs to make up for what the government was or wasn't doing." And he asked me to coach him in founding Citizens Climate Lobby. Well, just over 6 years ago, they didn't exist. A week ago Sunday, they turned 6 years old. They have 131 chapters around the United States. And in the first 9 months of this year, their volunteers have had 873 letters to the editor published in the US and Canada on their issue, which is a carbon tax and dividend. They've had 163 op-eds published, and they've had 639 meetings with members of Congress, Parliament or their staff. Mm-hmm. And what's really remarkable, if you don't mind, I want to tell you the story of one of their volunteers. She said, I started with climate trauma. I would read Bill McKibben's book Earth, and I would weep at home, and I would weep at work. And she joined this group, and 18 months later, she's co-leading a workshop on creating relationships with members of Congress and the media. And if I could just tell you a little bit of what she said. She said, I needed a model for creating relationships with members of Congress. Other people use other models like a work relationship model. I adore romantic relationships. So she said, I use romance as my model. That first meeting with the editorial writer, it's like a blind date, only you've decided ahead of time you're going to marry this fellow. If it doesn't work with the editorial writer, you'll marry one of his friends in the paper, the environment writer, the business writer. Somebody will find you interesting and compelling. And getting to your question about a kind of a gentler methodology, she ends her little statement by saying, during our conference last year, I met with 20 congressional offices. I met with folks whose view of the world was very different than mine. Going into their offices was hard. I had to let go of a lot of emotional baggage. I could no longer judge them or hold hostility in my heart towards them. I had to let go of my fear of climate change, my fear they wouldn't listen to me. I had to center myself in love, releasing fear and centering in love. This is sacred and profound work, end of quote. Now, most people would think meeting with 20 congressional offices, including all the offices in Virginia, this is dirty work or hopeless work. Now, she called it sacred and profound work. And I think that gets to your question about this kind of gentler approach rather than kind of protesting and throwing down the placards.
Relentless but polite.
Yes.
We're speaking with Sam Daly Harris. He's the founder of Results and the founder of Microcredit Summit Campaign and the CEO of the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation. This is the 20th anniversary of his book, Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. And it's topical currents. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll take some calls and your email. Stay with us.
And 21 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And we resume our discussion with Sam Daly Harris, activist and author. He's also reissued the 20th anniversary edition of his landmark book called Reclaiming Our Democracy. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. That number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRM. Also, you can email us. That's radio@WLRN.org. And Bonnie, Twitter?
Twitter is @TopicalCurrents. So I'd like to look at this mouse click activism that you just referred to. And are you saying, I mean, it's better than nothing, isn't it? Do you consider it effective or just not enough?
Absolutely. Everyone should participate as they wish in this mouse click activism, but don't stop there. There's the author Paul Loeb, who wrote the book The Soul of a Citizen. He told me recently this year, he said, you know, those e-petitions to Congress or those emails to Congress, they're counted, but they're also discounted. And so, you know, you can't just leave it to your member of Congress being told, oh, well, you got 150 emails on this or 27 on that. They need to see your face. They need to hear your voice. They need to know what concerns you beyond hearing it from a mouse click tally. If I could read one little section from the book, it's about a Canadian activist, and she reads a book and she really changes her life in terms of her carbon footprint. And she said, but it's going to take more. It can't be just me. And she is involved in a protest in Ottawa in this particular case. And this is very recent. And she said, two things I realized. Number one was that journalists didn't seem to know much about, in this case, this issue of climate change. And number two, we were making a lot of noise outside Parliament House. Why weren't we going inside and actually talking to the lawmakers and policymakers? And I write in the book this, quote, her question reverberates through our mostly hollow lives as citizens. It's the question for all mouse click advocates who are serious about systemic change and who want to do more than just lift a finger for the next mouse click. The sad answer as to why we aren't going inside and actually talking to the lawmakers is that most people who want big change can't find an organization capable of empowering them at a level equal to their desire for change. Most organizations ask us for nothing more than a click and a check. They see us as little children who are too busy with play, too distracted, too naive, and too incapable of doing the homework necessary to go really deep with our democracy. And I say, if you can find an organization that can help you go deep with your democracy, then miracles can happen.
You say that volunteer, quote, instincts lead them astray. How?
Well, what I was referring to there was I had written these 13 commitments in one of the new chapters of what I see is needed to succeed at citizen empowerment and transformation. And my wife said, boy, you're letting people see these commitments. Isn't that like giving away the store? And I said, well, you know, I think if I tacked them to every tree in the country and sent them out on the internet, people would still get it wrong. The instincts that we have on how to do citizen empowerment and transformation are so infantile that we really don't know what works. So one example, most groups would say, well, you know, we need to do one issue for 2 or 3 months and then switch to a different issue for 2 or 3 months and then another one to keep people interested. No, that's not how it works. You really need to focus so people can go deep on an issue and feel that they have the confidence and competence to pick up the phone and ask for the meeting with the member of Congress or with the editorial writer or whatever. So our instincts on what amounts to citizen empowerment and transformation are not very accurate, really.
How willing are congressional representatives to meet with us? How simple or difficult is it to get a meeting?
Well, you know, I had told that story earlier of the woman who started with climate trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, part of her story was in the last year and a half, she had to have 7 appointments, her and her group, with the legislative director to her congressman. Now, her congressman happens to be Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader. She's in the Richmond, Virginia area. Mm-hmm. They met 7 times in 18 months before the 8th time was with Eric Cantor. So this is not a 50-yard dash. You know, this is a marathon. And so if you're in it for the 50 yards, it might not happen, but if you're in it for the marathon, it'll absolutely happen. There's this drawing on one page of one of the new chapters, and on the left side of the page is a small circle that's labeled your comfort zone. And to the right is a much larger circle that's labeled where the magic happens. So you need to find an organization that'll help you move over from your comfort zone to where the magic happens. And for me, that's like seeing your dreams for the world in a letter published in the newspaper, you know, seeing your member of Congress begin to move for the first time toward the issue that you're talking about.
Go ahead.
1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. You have a question, Bonnie, then we'll take a call.
Okay, I was just, you know, on a practical level, people are busy. You know, their lives are full. Many people have a couple of jobs. You know, they're trying to make ends meet. Yeah. They have children, many people. So how do they find the time to meet with somebody, a legislative, whatever, 7 times, and then meet with their congressman the 8th time or their senator?
Sure. Let me just say a couple things. There's this quote by Mark Twain that I'm only recently familiar with, and he said, the 2 most important days of your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. And so not everyone's in the why question, but when you are, I think the answer to the why includes to matter, to leave the campsite cleaner than we found it, to make a difference, to give back. Now, and the work that we're talking about with results on global poverty, with citizen climate lobby on climate change, with another group I'm working with, the Peace Alliance on peace issues, these kinds of organizations help you answer that why question at a national and a global level. And someone might say to me, look, I have two little children. I just can't get involved right now. Mm-hmm. Well, people need to be true to their own circumstance. But someone else might come up to me and say, you know, I have two little children and I have to get involved in this issue because I really want the world to be really better for them. So it's different for different people. And what we're discussing clearly isn't for everyone.
Let's take a quick telephone call. We've got Barbara. She's in Hallandale. Hi.
Yes. Hello. Good afternoon. I've been listening, and I live in Hallandale in HUD housing that's run by the Archdiocese of Miami. And there are a couple of thousand old people who are being abused in this housing conglomeration that I have been working for over a year and a half that I've been here. I'm being evicted illegally. And I've gone through just about everybody in the hierarchy. Your author seems to think that all these little conglomerate groups can actually do something, but I've gone through everybody, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office, where I got no assistance, Bill Nelson's office, which was even worse, and he's taking care of the elderly in the Congress, and or rather the House and Senate. And I've gone through the hierarchy of local politicians. I've gone through all the little companies and little foundations, and nobody listens. Old people are being abused. It's a felony, and nobody listens. Washington right now can't get its act together. Who do you go to when everybody just wants to get elected again, put money in their back pocket? I don't know what the heck to do anymore.
What would you recommend,
sure.
Sam?
Sure. Well, let me say a couple of things. One thing that I'm going to say is something you may already be doing, but before, in a sense, talking to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, which, of course, you should do, I would really be urging you to talk with others in that community, for starters.
Let me tell you this very quickly, sir. Yeah. Everybody has been told in this building, if they side with me, they'll be evicted.
Well, I think you just need to persevere and need to speak to people so that they'll see what you see.
People see it. That's the problem. And they won't do anything. Everybody's scared because these buildings are totally illegal. There's Miami and Broward, and then it runs across the country. I've talked to Debbie Sinzipper, who won a Pulitzer Prize exposing HUD in 07. She's with the Washington Post now.
Have you written letters to the editors of the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, and the Miami Herald?
I've gone to the Sun Sentinel, sir. Unfortunately, they never even looked at the documents. I went to the people from the Miami Herald. I had a reporter sit with me for an hour and a half looking at a suitcase full of documents, and I can't get a phone call back.
Yeah.
I've got, to be perfectly honest, I'm supposed to be talking to Kenny Malone at the end of the week when he comes back from your station, hopefully because somebody somewhere has to listen.
Okay. Well, let me just say
this. You cannot imagine what's going on. Yeah.
Kenny has worked on this issue with assisted living facilities. Yeah.
Right. I would assert that right now you're talking to tens of thousands of people, so if nothing ever has worked before, at least this is another kind of start. I really urge you to get to your most local level, the city council, the county council, the state rep or state senators, that kind of level, And it's really, it's funny, I've been asked this question different than the way you've asked it, but in the lectures that I've been doing, I've done about 10 so far with 11 to go. And I keep looking at Nelson Mandela in the first couple of years of 27 years of imprisonment, or Mahatma Gandhi and involved in jailed by the British government in his native country in India, and finding that perseverance and finding that clarity of voice and not acting alone and breaking through that logjam called, if you listen to her, you'll be evicted too, or whatever the barriers that are there, because people make a difference, and people make a difference when they don't act alone, when they persist, when they get the information out to others that need to hear it.
We're speaking with Sam Daly Harris, and this is on the 20th anniversary of his book, Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. We're going to take a short break and come back and take more of your calls and your emails.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, we resume our conversation with Sam Daly Harris. His book, recently re-released on its 20th anniversary, Reclaiming Our Democracy. Let's take a few more calls. 1-800-743-9576, if you'd like to get in. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Next up, we have Valerie. She's in Miami. Hi.
Hey, Joe. It's Valerie Wisecracker. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm quite well, and I'm thrilled to hear your guest. I'm thrilled to hear the voice that I haven't heard for, maybe 45 years. As you know, I'm a musical environmental activist, and when I was in high school, Tim Harris was a teacher in our music department. He was inspirational to all of us at the time in our lives when we were most receptive to his nurturing. I mean, I could go on without trying to get too emotional, but he was essential to my musical development, and he encouraged me to write protest songs. I've never forgotten him, and I'm not the least bit surprised he's the beautiful human being still that we knew back then, and I just wanted to thank him for his influence on me. I don't know if he remembers all of us crazy kids at North Miami High School, but we just loved him, and he just meant the world to us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's great to hear your voice, Valerie.
That's really all I have to say. except, you know, if there's something around it that somebody thinks that they need to change, they should do it. They can make a difference. And my motto has become, an environmental victory is temporary, and an environmental defeat is permanent. And you could beat them 5 or 10 times, but if they beat you once, the game's over. So you have to keep trying. So, and I thank you for giving me the strength to be able to do that. Thank you. Bye.
That's great.
Thanks for calling.
If I could, you know, I think people want to connect with organizations that give that other level of support, like results.org or citizensclimate.org, or citizensclimatelobby.org or peacealliance.org. And you can find, even if you just go to those groups to learn a little bit of the methodology and steal it, to take it to some other issue you care about.
Tell us about the Peace Alliance.
Well, you know, I've only just started working with the Peace Alliance in July. And we've been implementing this strategy of the monthly conference calls, et cetera. And they had their very first conference call last Saturday, a couple of days ago. And their issue, because I'm really urging them to focus, as with the other groups, is the Youth Promise Act. And they had a conference call guest. It was Congressman Bobby Scott of Virginia, who's the lead sponsor on this bill. It was a couple of days ago. And this bill would really... We invest so much in prisons and incarceration, and the bill would really invest in intervention programs that prevent the violence that is so rampant in communities. So they've been taking on this little initiative they just started and had 5 op-eds published last week. And, you know, so they're just at the beginning stages of the coaching that I've been doing. And if I could just give you one flavor of results is victory. When we started in 1984 lobbying on the Child Survival Fund, UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, told us that 41,000 children under the age of 5 died every day from mostly preventable malnutrition and disease, things like measles coupled with malnutrition. The latest numbers from UNICEF came out 2 weeks ago. The 41,000 a day has gone down to 18,000 a day. Now, it's still scandalously high, but A, it's going in the right direction, and B, we know we didn't do it all at Results, but we were in there year in, year out, decade in, decade out, doing the advocacy work that's begun to make it a priority.
Let's move along. We've got Ellen. She's in Miami. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Thank you. My name is Ellen Kempler. I've participated in Results for almost 30 years. I wanted to stress that there are two purposes to Results, the first being to end the worst aspects of poverty, make poverty history, but the second one is to break through the idea that I don't make a difference, which means that when you participate with Results, it's not just re-empowering your government, but you do it for yourself. I taught school for 35 years, and I think my participation in Results made me a much better teacher, made me a better family member. All the qualities that you hear in Sam's voice, you can notice he never makes anyone wrong and still prevails and goes forward. All of these qualities are the ways that we get trained with Results. And I was wondering if I could give you my phone number, and anybody in Miami who's interested in participating in Results, I'd love to hear from them.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, my name is Ellen Kempler, K-E-M-P-L-E-R, and my phone number is 305-469-6709. And I want to thank Sam publicly for the impact he's had on my life personally, but also I was inspired to start with a friend, Kathleen Close, Partners for Self-Employment. We lend money to low-income people in Miami. We give loans and so forth. Our borrowers typically earn $10,000 more a year. So it has all kinds of ways that it influences not just the global community, but also our local community.
What's the name of that organization, Ellen?
Partners for Self-Employment.
Okay.
We're on Biscayne Boulevard and 30th. Okay. I can give you that number, too, if you beg me.
I'm sure.
Go ahead.
At 305-438-1407. And extension 315, Maria Cotto is our executive director.
Okay, very good.
Hey, Sam, any comment?
Well, yeah, I've known Ellen for many, many years, and she's wonderful. And she raised the issue of microcredit as something that we began lobbying on more than 25 years ago. And I think, you know, maybe many of your listeners know of Muhammad Yunus, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, who's been a member of the Results Board since 1988. And the story of how he started Grameen Bank, I think, is so instructive. He came to the United States to get a PhD from Vanderbilt, and he went home to Bangladesh after its independence, and he taught at a university. And there was the famine in Bangladesh at the time. And he said, the economic theories in my textbook are very elegant, but they're not working in the village next to my campus. People are virtually dying on the doorsteps of his campus. He said, I'm going to go in the village and learn economics from them. And really, this young economics professor was having a spiritual crisis. He basically said, I dreaded going to my own lectures with their elegant theories, you know, and I wanted to see if I could be of use to one person for one day. That was his question. Not the 40 million that his bank affects through 8 million clients. But he met a woman, 1976. She was making bamboo stools. He asked her how much money profit she made every day. She said, I make 2 pennies a day profit. He said, how is that possible? She said, I don't have the money to buy the bamboo, so I borrow it from a trader, a moneylender, on the condition that I sell the finished product back to him at a price he sets. And the price he sets barely covers the cost of the bamboo. He said, well, could you make more than that? She said, I could, but I don't have the money to buy the bamboo. I have to keep going back to the trader. So we had a student go around the campus, the village, and the student found 42 people who needed a grand total of $27 to be freed from this moneylender. And he, less than a dollar each. And so he lent 42 people a grand total of $27 from his pocket so they could pay off the moneylender, buy their raw material, make their product, and sell it to the highest bidder. And this woman went from 2 cents a day to $1.25 a day immediately, because now she could sell her product to the highest bidder. And these 42 became the first borrowers of what eventually became Grameen Bank. And there are now 8 million borrowers affecting 40 million family members. And they shared the Nobel Peace Prize with Muhammad Yunus in 2006. And Ellen and Kathleen learned about this initiative and, you might say, brought it back to Miami.
And started this Partners for Self-Employment.
That's right.
Before we take our break, we have a caller who says that our earlier caller, Barbara, who talked about elderly abuse, that there is an elderly abuse hotline that can be called. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm sure if you dial 311, you get local information about services such
right.
as that.
Right.
So let's take another short break. We'll be back with more.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Sam Daly Harris, the founder of Results and several other things. I just want to give some of your websites, which you mentioned, Sam. Results.org, ReclaimingOurDemocracy.org, CitizenClimateLobby.org, and ThePeaceAlliance.org. And we'll have links to all those on our website and on our Facebook page.
Topical Currents Facebook page.
Topical Currents Facebook page. I wanted to change the subject and ask you about the Citizens United ruling. And some has this decision quashed some of your belief in the powers of an engaged citizenry? Some would say we're losing our democracy, not reclaiming
it. Right. Well, it's one more reason to be discouraged. It's one more reason to give up. It's one more reason to be cynical. But we can't. We mustn't. You know, the whole notion of money in politics only works if we're asleep. In other words, if I'm a member of Congress, I need to raise enough money so a little bit before the election, I can wake up enough people to get reelected, and then they can go back to sleep, and then later I'll raise enough money to put enough TV ads to wake up enough. Well, if we were awake, those ads wouldn't work. I mean, if we were clear about our own priorities and attentive to what's going on, you know, we could make that change. There's this great quote from Apollo astronaut Rusty Schweikert, who said, "We aren't passengers on spaceship Earth. We're the crew. We aren't residents on this planet. We're citizens. The difference in both cases is responsibility." And in the book, I say, in the mid-80s, when we were just getting going, a number of us would get up out of our passenger seats and walk up to the cockpit and notice there's nobody up there. Those cockpit seats are our seats, but we have to do our homework. We have to deeply educate ourselves so we can bring things up in a positive direction.
Could you expand a little bit on microcredit? Your career has been very closely linked to that. Tell us more about it.
I want to relate this story that Muhammad Yunus would say. He would say, he would be asked in a Q&A, what was your strategy in forming this microbank, Grameen Bank? And he would say, well, I didn't have a strategy. I just kept doing what was next. But when I look back, my strategy was whatever banks did, I did the opposite. If banks lent to the rich, I lent to the poor. If banks lent to men, I lent to women. If banks made large loans, I made small ones. If banks required collateral, my loans were collateral free. If banks required a lot of paperwork, my loans were illiterate friendly. If you had to go to the bank, my bank went to the village. Yes, that was my strategy. Whatever banks did, I did the opposite. And when we started lobbying in 1986 on microcredit, there were 1 million of the poor around the world who had access to a microloan. Now, we've lobbied decade in and decade out. The most recent tally is 124 million have access to microloans. We didn't do it all, but at the advocacy level, Results was a leader in that effort to bring it from off the back burner to the back burner and to the front burner so people could really deal with it and move it forward.
And what about the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation? Now, that's a project of the Results Educational Fund.
Sure. And basically, I'm coaching organizations. I go to an organization and I say this. I say, look, could you see being coached in finding and training that small portion of your members who want to go far beyond mouse click advocacy and create champions in Congress and the media for your cause? And the causes I've been working for at the moment are ending global and domestic poverty, causes like stabilizing our climate, and causes like the Peace Alliance. So,
okay.
And we'll move along to another caller. This is Carla. She's in Miami. Hi.
Yes, hi. This is Carla Barrow, and I, too, am a member of Results and know Sam for many years. Hi, Sam. I just wanted to see if you could speak a little bit about like the importance of those of us in South Florida getting involved in some of the issues around international policies and policies that affect globally the poor, and particularly at a time like this where there's a gridlock regarding the budget, and I think a lot of people have the frame of mind that nobody's going to listen, that there's right now that you know, we can't even get federal employers paid, why should we be worrying about foreigners? And you know, just to speak a little bit too about some of the tools that we use in Results, such as not just meeting with representatives of Congress and writing to them, but also writing to your papers and educational outreach meetings.
Sure. Well, thanks. You know, when I started in Results, the members of Congress were Claude Pepper and Bill Lehman and Dante Fussell. But what's true about this through line is that South Florida members of Congress have tended to be on very key committees, the foreign in areas of international relations and also global poverty and the like. So that's true today. Ileana Ross-Layton and others play very key roles in Congress. You know, I could say, well, if you want to make a difference, move to Miami or Broward County or the like to impact some of those key elected officials. So that's important for people to know. And, you know, we're constantly working to bring this information to our newspapers and radio stations and the like so our voice can be amplified. And so that our member of Congress can say, well, it's not just the six of them or the eight of them. They're talking to the whole community. So this is something we really want to pay attention to. I'm wondering if I could tell this one story that would give a whole other view of this.
We're getting a little bit short on time. So.
Oh, okay. Well, it's the bottom line is this quote that's attributed to Anonymous that goes, be outrageous. It's the only place that isn't crowded. Cynical is crowded. Discouraged is crowded. But being outrageous in your activism as a citizen is one of the places that isn't crowded, and people should be encouraged to get involved.
Sam, we've got a caller here that was interested in speaking to you, but now he's gone. But tell us more then about laser talk.
Well, one of the key pieces is that you're not dangerous yet until you're articulate, until you can speak the issues. So we invest time every month on our conference calls in maybe a role play where one person practices with hundreds listening in, a phone call to a congressional aide, or another thing we have, people might recognize it as a kind of an elevator talk, but we call it a laser talk, a short little 1 minute talk that really helps you package together some key information so that if you're picking up the phone and making a call, you don't feel so kind of, what do I say? I don't know what to say.
Sam, before we go, let me tell you that an associate of yours is in the studio Robert Thomas Jr., the percussionist.
Oh, my. Hi there.
From Weather Report, he says hello.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Hi, Bobby.
Okay, well.
It was Bobby when he was in high school.
I knew him as Bobby, too. We used to play softball together.
Okay.
Well, Sam Daly Harris, it's been a pleasure. He's the founder of Results. That's an acronym for responsibility for ending starvation using legislation, trim tabbing, and support. And this is the 20th anniversary of his book, Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. You can go to results.org, reclaimingourdemocracy.org, citizenclimatelobby.org, or thepeacealliance.org. Want to apologize, our email went down. So thanks, Sam Daly Harris, so much, and congratulations.
It's been an honor. Thanks.
And that wraps up today's program. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and previous programs at our website. That's WLRN.org. More information as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page, including book and author links, photos, and discussion. And to the calendar, on this day in 1890, 113 years ago, the birth of Dwight David Eisenhower in Denison, Texas, the 34th president. In World War II, of course, he became commander of the European Theater of Operations in 1942 and Supreme Allied Commander in 1943. And on this day in 1977, 39 years ago, the death of ultimate crooner Bing Crosby. His White Christmas recording of 1942 is said to be the best-selling single of all time. One more while we consider the curse of the goat. On this day in 2003, 10 years ago, Cubs fan Steve Bartman inadvertently deflects a foul ball away from the outstretched glove of Moises Alou and keeps the Marlins alive in playoff game 6. The Marlins score 8 runs after the flub, won the game, the series, and beat the Yankees in the World Series. Josh Beckett pitched a 5-hit shutout in Game 6. Aisle 4, Row 8, Seat 113 at Wrigley Field is now a tourist attraction. And we leave with this from Bing Crosby, quote, Frank Sinatra is a singer who comes along once in a lifetime. But why did it have to be during mine? Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned. The next hour is Here and Now from NPR News.